for months, people have been talking about this as if it's the first injury in NBA history. And for what? And then wonder why dudes don't want to talk to the media, lol. I'm all about positivity. Let's talk about how unreal LA has been, or how Manu is 40 going on 23, or how, BP, I'm gonna let you finish, but at Kyle Anderson 5 had one of the best assists of all time. Of all time. Hashtag Team Slow-Mo.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. We're going to recap the six games from Thursday, some absolute howlers in that batch. We're going to preview the 10-game slate for Friday in the NBA, and we're going to shine the player spotlight on Noah Vonleh of the Chicago Bulls. So,
let's get to it.
Thank you, Michael Bolton. The monstrous line of the night. There's no real debate about this one. Kemba Walker had 46 points, including 10 triples, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal. He was 13 of 18 from the field and 10 of 10 from the free throw line. Before I talk about Kemba a little bit more, you know, some people were questioning yesterday's monstrous line of the night. I don't do it subjectively. I don't say, well, this guy was a monster. Let's put him in. So people were saying, oh, LeBron should have had it because he had 17 assists and no turnovers. Or Dwight should have had it because he had a 30 and 30 game. The way that I do it is based on 8-category fantasy value, taking into consideration all 8-category numbers, as we do when we talk season projections or ranks over the past 2 weeks, month, full season, all that sort of stuff. Whoever had the best game on the day based on that, and that was Anthony Davis because of those 5 blocks and because he was 9 of 9 from the free throw line, that weighs just as importantly as someone having 30 rebounds, like the differences in those numbers, and even LeBron's 17 assists. You have to take all those. It's not like, oh, he had 30 rebounds, 30 points. He's the monstrous line of the night. If you're just negatives in all these other areas. And I even turned off free throw percentage as a category to see where Dwight would rank. And he was only about 6th or 7th if you punted free throw percentage on yesterday's thing. So that's how I do it. The waiver wire line of the night is the best performance from a player that's owned in under 50% of leagues. The young gun of the night is the best performance from a first or second year player. And the dud of the night is the worst performance by a player who's owned in over 70% of leagues. So that's the way that all those awards are done. But again, no one's really having any debate about Kemba here. He has been really sensational this year. The 20th ranked player over the course of the season and just hovering around that number all year, giving you 3 triples a game, almost 6 assists, which is a little bit higher than where he'd been the previous couple of seasons. The steals are solidly over 1. Your field goal percentage is nowhere near what it used to be at the beginning of his career. It's still not good, and you still have to account for that, but it's not as horrendous as what it has been in the past. And his free throw percentage is spectacular. Over the last 7 games, he's shooting 97% on, and that's over 5 attempts per game, which is an unbelievable contribution to that category. Yeah, Kemba, if he ends up getting traded, which this was the perfect opportunity for him to get traded this season, I believe next year is the last year of his contract. I don't think he'll get traded, but his value could dip on another team. I don't think much is changing for him next season in Charlotte. He's still going to be the man. He's still going to be shooting threes and scoring 20 points and getting almost 6 assists and 1.2 steals and shooting elite free throw percentages and, you know, being a low 40s guy in terms of field goal percentage. This is just who he's going to be. His 3-point shooting's excellent, 40% last year, 39% this season, and over the last 41 games, he's actually shooting 43% from 3. So it's been an excellent season from Kemba, another solid finish. This will be his, well, if it holds as it is, it'll be his best fantasy finish ever, and you're able to get him in the 3rd round of majority of drafts, and I think you'll be pretty happy with the result that you've gotten from Kemba Walker. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Kosta Koufos of the Sacramento Kings. Koufos had 14 and 11 with 3 assists, but it's the defense that really brought it for Koufos. 4 steals and 4 blocks, and he was 7 of 11 from the field. You'd be surprised to know that he's a top 110 player over the last 2 weeks, mainly because he's shooting 58% from the field and getting you a steal and a block per game, as well as almost 9 rebounds. But when we're looking at his overall value, his free throws, he's hitting 25%. That's piss poor. He's not scoring much. But if you need some blocks with high field goal percentage and rebounds, where rebounds is the number one contributing thing that he does outside of field goal percentage, then he's going to have some short-term value on a streaming basis. But you're not owning him in anything else apart from an 18-team league, probably. He is going to get some random rest nights. Some nights, like today, he will play extra minutes. He played 32 minutes in this game because the Kings had to get that win over the Atlanta Hawks. He'll play 12 in some others, or 16. So he really is just a streaming option, but that is a massive performance if for some reason you used him in DFS or if you rolled with him in your standard league, or in your seasonal league, sorry. The young gun of the night is the Don. Donovan Mitchell had 26, 5, and 4. He hit a triple. He had 3 steals, and he was 11 of 22 from the field and 3 of 4 from the line. His field goal percentage has been a little bit of a concern lately, and in fact, over the last 2 months, he's down at 42%, which is not horrendous, but his true shooting is down at under 53%, showing that he is below league average in that time frame, but still averaging 21 points per game, 4.5 rebounds, and almost 4 assists with 1.5 steals. He is a top 50 player on the season. He does, I believe, have top 10, top 12 upside in the next 3 to 4 seasons. He'd need to bring his rebounds to 4.5, which he has been doing over the last 2 months. He'd need to bring his assists to about 5, which with Ricky Rubio around is a little bit tougher, but Rubio could be gone in 2 years' time, and I could see Mitchell averaging 5, maybe even pushing higher. And if he does that while averaging 25 points per game, which again, feels like a bit of a stretch considering he does have a usage of 28% this season, but it's all possible. And I think that he is going to be a pretty popular third round pick next year. It might end up being a little bit high, but I could see that being a solid range for Donovan Mitchell. We know that he has, you know, absolutely blown everyone's expectations out of the water this season, and there is still scope for him to get better. The field goal percentage, again, on this high usage, it is a problem, it is a concern. As I talked about with Kemba, you do have to deal around that. But that's why I like field goal percentages being one of my core punt areas. It's something that fluctuates wildly from week to week. Or game to game. It's something that a majority of the better players will have these poor shooting nights, but still able to rack up other stats. And I don't have to worry about someone, oh man, he had 28, 8 and 4, but he killed my field goal percentage. In nearly every case, I was like, I don't care. I literally do not care. It is an inconsistent stat where a lot of the better players struggle in that area. So that's why that is one of my, you know, tenant punting categories, where I just, that and turnovers, I just generally, and there are some times where I don't, where I go really big, but if I'm, you know, rostering a lot of wings and guards, I just don't care about the field goal percentage category, and that's where I am in the majority of my leagues. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Nikola Vucevic of the Orlando Magic, 7-4-1 with a 3 and a steal, and he was 3 of 11 from the field. He played only 22 minutes because the Magic were getting their ass kicked in a pretty significant fashion. He's the 27th ranked player this season, but outside the top 110 over the last 2 weeks, mainly because his field goal percentage, and again, this is another one of these reasons, everything else about him is fairly similar. If you look at his season numbers versus the last 2 weeks' numbers, yeah, he's averaging 1.6 rebounds fewer per game. The threes, he's from 1.3 down to 0.6. Now, these are all factors. His blocks are from 1.1 to 0.9. But the biggest drop-off we're talking about is field goal percentage, where it's gone from 49 to 41%, which is a Z-score difference of -2 in that area, which brings his overall rank down probably 30, 40 spots on its own. And you have these variances in field goal percentage so often. Yes, those other numbers, they're not ideal. You know, the blocks difference is a -1.2. The rebounds difference is a -0.6. The 3-point difference is a -0.8. They're nowhere near the large impact that field goal percentage has. And that will start to rise, but I do get the feeling that there might be some games where Vooch isn't exactly playing 32 or 33 minutes a night here. I think 30 might be your high expectation for him. Still needs to be owned, obviously. Just tonight was not a good experience as a Nikola Vucevic owner or anyone watching the Orlando Magic. Let's get into these 6 games and try and work out if there's anything that we can take out of them from a fantasy point of view. And I'm going to tell you straight up now, the first game, you can take jack shit out of it. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets beat the Grizzlies by 61. It looked like it was going to be more than that. Minutes were spread all over the place. I'm glad Tyreke Evans rested the last 2 games so he could come in and play 19 minutes here. Just disgusting, disgusting performance from this team. It's piss poor. Evans was great, 16-7-4 with a triple-1, and even though he only played 19 minutes, that's still a very, very usable line. One thing we do have to pay attention to with the Grizzlies is they do have just one more back-to-back this season, so perhaps Evans and Gasol resting won't be quite as prevalent, they're definitely going to rest that back-to-back. No, and so will Chandler Parsons. But how brazen will the Grizzlies be about sitting them in other games through the rest of the season? It feels like the NBA, it feels like they're giving up on enforcing these tanking rules, which I'll talk about when we get to Hawks Kings later on. But it is something to monitor. Wayne Seldon is scoring at a high rate at the moment. He's doing very Dylan Brooksy things. 18 points in 21 minutes. One rebound, one assist, one steal, and one block on high percentage shooting. The minutes can't be trusted. The production can't be trusted. He is a stream option and not someone that I'd be adding in 12s. There was no Marc Gasol or Andy Harrison in this game. So Deontay Davis, who played exceptionally well with Gasol in the game last one, he was, 4-2 with two blocks in his 25 minutes. And honestly, just looking over this box score, there is nothing I can tell you. Dylan Brooks is not a 12-team league guy. Ben McLemore isn't. Jermichael Green isn't. Jarrell Martin isn't. None of these guys are 12-teamers, except for Evans and Gasol. And if you wanted to drop one of them, I can totally understand that. I don't think they're going to be resting quite as often over the next week, but that remains to be seen. We don't know, because this is a disgusting, disgusting effort from this team, and it has been for the majority of this season. Let's go on to the next game. This wasn't too much better. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Orlando Magic. The Sixers pumped them, beat them by 30. The Sixers have now won five straight, and this was a back-to-back to Philadelphia, for Philadelphia, and they were able to sit all their guys. Šarić, only 22 minutes. Embiid, only 20. Simmons, only 27. Covington, only 26. And with the continued impressive play of Justin Anderson, I can see guys like JJ Redick and Dario Šarić and Bob Cove, playing 3 to 4 minutes under their season average as we go down the stretch. Yes, the Sixers have got the easiest schedule down the stretch, so that's going to precipitate some of that. And yes, in the harder matchups, they'll see their minutes go back up. But a guy like Redick, who had 12 points in 17 minutes, instead of playing 32-33, which he was doing to begin the season, I think he settles in at 28 minutes a night here, perhaps fewer, with Marco Bellinelli in town, with Ersan Ilyasova providing a little bit more spacing. And he is not a 12-team league player as a must-own guy. He's a stream-type option. Covington was still strong. Simmons and Embiid still did their thing as well, despite the limited minutes. This was that much of a blowout that Furkan Korkmaz played 12 minutes, and he was coming off a broken foot. The Orlando Magic, as Gordon, that's okay. 10 and 11 with two steals and a block. Mario Hezonja started with John Isaac and John Simmons out. He had 9 and 3 in his 25 minutes. Not great from him, and with Simmons and Isaac likely to return in the coming games, and Fournier is still a potential option at some point, I don't think that Hezonja is much of a 12-team league guy. DJ Augustine struggled, Shelvin Mack did very little, Aaron Aflalo still getting rotation minutes is a confusing thing, but I guess the bright spot is Rodney Purvis, who had 19 points in his 22 minutes, but 67% shooting, no other contributions at all apart from the three triples means that is a somewhat fluky performance that's not going to have any long-term meaningful impact on fantasy leagues as we move forward. It's going to be pretty tough watching some of these games down the stretch. It's part of the reason why, for DFS, you should be looking to really reduce your exposure, and seasonal leagues, this should definitely be the last week of your season. I would say that it has to be. Any league that I set up, our finals end this Sunday, and even then it feels like it might be going a week too far. Let's move on to the next game. It's the Los Angeles Lakers and the New Orleans Pelicans. Shout out to the Pelicans for winning their back-to-back-to-back, all three of those games. They were challenged here with the Lakers, but pulled it out late. Just ludicrous minutes management from Luke Walton. Your team's not making the playoffs. Why are you playing Lonzo Ball 44 minutes and the future MVP 43 minutes, Kyle Kuzma? Two guys who have come off injuries over the past 2 to 3 weeks. I don't understand it in the slightest. There is absolutely no need for three of these guys to play over 42 minutes in a non-overtime game, and that's KCP, Kuzma, and Ball. That was strong, and it's great for us for fantasy, but it's nonsense when we look at the long-term picture of stuff. You can throw Tyler Ennis out there for a couple of minutes, Alex Caruso, give a little bit more to Travis Ware or Derek Williams, play Ivica Zubats more than 5 minutes, get Thomas Bryant in. You're not winning, you're not getting into the playoffs. Yeah, you're competitive, you don't have a draft pick to tank for, we know that, but this sort of minutes is bullshit. Play him 34, play him 33. There's no need for this. Kuzma had 24 and 5 with 4 triples, and Lopez had 23 and 6, continuing this really stunning late-season surge from Lopez. Well, Lonzo Ball's shooting was absolutely horrendous. 6 points on 15 shots. He was 2 of 15 from the field. But as he does, 13 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 blocks, contributes in those areas, and another guy that is significantly boosted by a punt field goal percentage build. Randall had 23 and 10, but interestingly, with all these guys playing so many minutes, with only using an 8-man rotation, which is nonsense, Isaiah Thomas played 26 minutes. Now, he had 15 points, he shot well, he didn't do very much else, and I think that it's a realistic thing to say that Isaiah Thomas won't be a top 50 player next season. It feels like I don't know where he's going to go. I don't know who's going to sign him. I don't know how much money it's going to be. And I don't see any team going, we want Isaiah to be our number one guy as we move forward. I just don't see that happening. It's been a wild fall off for him. For the Pelicans, Davis was great, 33-9 with 3 steals and 2 blocks, while Rondo had another strong game, 24-2-10 with 3 steals and shot really well, 61%, and a surprising boost for your field goal percentage. Drew also got back on track, 16-3-6. Nick Mirotic, only 16 minutes, 5-6 with 2 steals. The minutes aren't going in the right direction for Mirotic, and I don't think at this point of the year that he is a must-hold guy. Cheick Diallo also saw his minutes go under Emeka Okafor. He had 2-7, while Okafor had 2-6 in his 20 minutes. Diallo is a big man stream for standard leagues and more of a deeper league guy, but Mirotic, Diallo, Emeka Okafor, they're all cutting into each other's playing time at this point, making none of them really 12-team league players at this stage of the season. The Detroit Pistons and the Houston Rockets, Blakey Griffin was great, 21-10-10, didn't shoot well, but still really good. And Luke Kennard, I've been telling you about Kennard, 33 minutes, 14-4-2 with 2 steals. His minutes continue to go up, he's an efficient shooter. The fact that Van Gundy wouldn't play him to begin the season, or the middle of the season, or to be honest, the end of the season until this last week, is a massive, massive black mark against him. Rookies are shit, they've got to earn their time. It's bullshit, it's ridiculous, he is a guy that showed he could hold his own from the very first moment he stepped on the court, and we're starting to see the minutes come his way and the production's there. He is going to be, I think, at some point in the next week or so, a standard league guy, if he's not already there. Those numbers, 14-4-2 with 2 steals on 55% shooting, is a 12-team guy. Will he stay at 32 minutes, 33 minutes? Yeah, it was an overtime game. Stan Johnson got early fouls and only played 14 minutes, but I think he's going to stay high 20s, maybe 30 minutes a game, Kennard, and that can be useful. So keep an eye on him. I don't think there's any need to own Reggie Jackson in standard leagues. 4-3 in 20 minutes on 2 of 13 shooting. They're going to ease him back in. They're not playing for anything, obviously. Just ease Jackson back in. And even at his best moments, he's not a 32-minute-per-game player. So don't get overly excited about him. Ish Smith had 18-8, playing better somehow with Jackson back. While Bullock had 12-8-4. Really nice production from Reggie to get the 8 rebounds, 2 steals and a block. He's not normally a guy that is known for getting those peripheral sort of numbers. On the Rockets, this happens all the time. Chris Paul was out, Eric Gordon started, so he went off. 22-3-5 with 2 steals. Excellent. He'll just as likely fall into a hole in the next game when Chrissy Paul is back. While Jim Harden had 21-8-5, 2 steals and 2 blocks, and an absolutely horrific 20% from the field. And to be honest, a pretty horrific 72% from the line. Now, 72% is not terrible, but on 18 attempts, it really does influence that free throw percentage category pretty significantly. Nene out of the rotation. Ryan Anderson is getting those backup center minutes, and that means we're getting Gerald Green in on a regular basis. This is just a deeper league situation, but he's obviously not afraid to shoot. He was 1 of 9 in 22 minutes. And with Luke Marmute hurting his knee and likely resting for the next couple of games, Green and Joe Johnson are going to see their roles increased. Maybe they put Anderson back at the 4 and a little bit more of Nene. But in deeper leagues, looking at a guy like Gerald Green could be worth doing at this point. The Utah Jazz and the Dallas Mavericks. Rudy Gobert, 11-7 with 2 steals and 5 blocks. Rubio had 22-5-3 with 5 steals. Ingles had 18-6-10. And Derek Favors had probably his best game for the season, or at least his best game with Rudy Gobert around. 19-7-5 with a triple one for Favors. He'd been hovering around that 26-minute mark a lot of this time. I still don't think that he's 100% a must-own. Of course, if he does this every night, he is. I just don't think he'll do this every night. His increased minutes came at the expense of Royce O'Neal, who only saw 12 minutes, while Jay Crowder struggled his way through 32 and had 11-4. Really a borderline 12-team league guy that you should be utilizing that spot for streaming rather than must-holding. On the Mavericks, Nerlens Noel and Salah Mejri, before the game, Rick Carlisle said that he'd find it hard to play them in the same game together, so they'd probably have to go into a rotation, and we saw that Noel did not play at all in this game, while Mejri saw 18 minutes. expect it to be reversed in the next game. So that means you're probably only going to get half of the games from Noel, making him an ideal defensive stream guy, but definitely not a guy to hold on to if he's only going to play half of the games. JJ Barea was great, 23-2-8. Dennis Smith is likely back next game, not for sure, but likely. So that's going to reduce Barea's value. They've also got a back-to-back coming next week, and JJ might sit one of those, while the Pencil and Yogi Ferrell both scored over 20 points. Ferrell's an interesting stream option for points, but not a must-own type of a player. Dirk battled his way through 25 minutes. It was far from his best game, only 4 points, while Dwight Powell saw his minutes drop to 19. Kyle Collinsworth, who was questionable heading into the game, only played 5 minutes late in the game because Aaron Harrison got 20. Yes, Aaron Harrison is playing for the Mavericks, and he played 20 minutes. Again, this team is in full tank mode, so you're going to see some bullshit all across the lineup. The last game of the night, speaking of bullshit, the Atlanta Hawks and the Sacramento Kings. First of all, this game was delayed due to a protest outside the Sacramento arena. They ended up not allowing fans in for security purposes. All those fans are getting a refund. If you don't know the story behind it, Stephon Clark, I believe the man's name was, who was shot unarmed a couple of days ago. I see so many comments about, you know, oh, they shouldn't be protesting in my way and stopping my, you know, enjoyment of a game or me watching on TV. They shouldn't be protesting. I just want to watch basketball. That is why these protests are effective, because I hadn't heard of Stephon Clark's issue before. I hadn't heard of this situation in Sacramento. Protests are done to raise awareness, to stop this sort of stuff happening. And when it impacts people's lives in, honestly, a minor way, That's a good thing. That's the idea of these protests. The game did go ahead clearly, but you know, sometimes, you know, basketball takes a backseat to real life issues. The Hawks decided, and we talked about it a bit yesterday. I don't know if I hammered it enough, but there was a risk to me that Dennis Schroeder would see fewer minutes, given that it's a double tank sort of game. Shout out to Danny LaRue for that term. They just said, screw it, we're just not playing Dennis Schroeder at all. Now, this 100% falls afoul of the resting protocol the NBA put out. You can't rest starters in road games, which is exactly what they did. Dennis Schroeder is by far their best player, and they just said, we're not playing him. So we'll see if the NBA does anything. My guess is they won't. They issued some bullshit statement to the Bulls, and the Bulls have completely just backed out and done other things now. So that doesn't seem to be sticking. This is going to be a problem when the Hawks play bad teams for the rest of the season. It's just going to be. Now, whether it will be outright resting or 21-minute performances, this is what will happen. In fact, in this game, every single player that saw the court played 20 minutes and none played more than 27 minutes. Damian Lee started. He had 13-2-4 with 3 steals. He could start the rest of the way. Tyler Dorsey hasn't exactly been super impressive, but Lee is more of a streamer, while Isaiah Taylor, any game like this coming forward, Taylor becomes a DFS option. He had 18-3-2, while The Undertaker, 13-10 with a triple one. Someone asked me, what's my wild prediction for today? My thing was, The Undertaker gets a double-double with a Richie Beno. Unfortunately, he only got the triple one and not the Richie Beno, but wasn't too far off that one. While the Moose, Mike Muscala, had 8-4 with 2 triples, replacing the Baptist. Now, the Hawks play the Warriors tomorrow, so I'd expect 34 minutes out of Schroeder. They know they're not going to win, so they'll just play him the minutes. And this is what you will see happening. Guys like our Andrew White won't play 26 minutes, or we won't get 22 tanktastic minutes of Miles Plumlee. It's absolutely disgraceful, this bullshit that's going on. Don't set out rules, NBA, if you're not going to enforce them. On to the Kings. Zach Randolph was out with gastroenteritis, which, if the Kings wanted to lose, they probably should have played Randolph. That would have actually helped them losing, but he was out. Skel Labissiere had 9-10 in 30 minutes. Only one player exceeded 30 minutes in this game, and that was, of course, the oldest looking man on this roster, and that's Kostas Koufos, because, of course, Vince Carter plays here. Justin Jackson had a good game, but we can't expect 88% shooting each night, while Frankie Mason had 16-7-8 in 30 minutes. With the way these minutes are being distributed, 18 for Bogdan Bogdanovic, 20 for De'Aaron Fox, 19 for Willie Cauley-Stein. In the throes of a playoff battle, De'Aaron Fox, Bogdan Bogdanovic, they're not must-own guys. You stream them in, you see what happens, but if this sort of shit's going to continue, and they're borderline as it is, there's no point. They're not a must-hold sort of guy. You could even say the same for Cauley-Stein, who struggled and not with foul trouble. Only 19 minutes in a game that Zach Randolph was not playing in. Just shenanigans all across the NBA today, unfortunately. Let's talk player spotlight now. We're going to Chicago and we're going to be looking at a player who came across at the trade deadline, and that is Noah Vonleh. He's a power forward. He is a guy that I've never been super high on. He was drafted pick number 9 by the Charlotte Hornets a couple of seasons ago, traded after 1 year in Charlotte to Portland as part of the Nikola Batum deal. And I remember arguing with people online, as I'm wont to do, when I said that this is a great deal for Charlotte. Nah, man, Batum's finished. Yeah, we get this young stud. Yeah, Vonleh's not good. But what he is a strong rebounder. And he has shown improvements. At the end of last season, I thought he looked like a starting power forward on a 20th seeded team. Well, yeah, the 20th best team in the NBA. I thought that's the sort of player he looked like he could be. A 25-minute guy, grabs 9 rebounds, blocks a shot, is a marginal, stretchy 3-point threat, can be a little bit of a small ball center. But that's really about it. He played okay to begin this season, but lost that starting job to Al-Farouq Aminu and struggled ever since. In fact, he's outside the top 330 for this season in only 15 minutes per game. But in Chicago, with Lauri Markkanen struggling with a back injury, he's picked it up. The last two games, he's averaging 11.5 and 10. He's hitting 2.5 threes with a block per game. Now, the threes are a little bit unpredictable considering he's hit 5 of them in 8 attempts over those last two games. But yeah, showing a little bit of the blocks, threes, rebounding combination that potentially he can have. I don't have massive hope for him. Obviously, Markkanen and Portis are the two power forwards in Chicago. And when Lowry comes back, Vonleh will go back to a pretty minimal role. And Lowry thinks he could return on Friday. One thing about Vonleh this season, though, and especially in his time in Chicago, his advanced markers have improved. He's putting together the best box score plus minus season of his career. The win shares are the best of his career. His true shooting percentage is equal to last season, so still not ideal, but his PER in Chicago is the best of his career. And while he is still a negative overall for the year, in Chicago, he's a plus 6.9. So, you know, he's been helping a little bit. Now, of course, that's only across 250 minutes, so it's a very limited sample size. And for the year, he's a negative 5.5, showing just how bad he was in Portland. But it's a step forward, and he's looked a little bit better. But if we're talking about Noah Vonleh and his dynasty-type potential, mate, can he ever have a top 250 season? I feel like that's even being a bit of a stretch, to be honest. I'm just not sure he's ever going to find himself in a situation where he can play 24 a night consistently, whether he can hit his shots consistently enough, whether he can hit those threes, which, again, 35 last year, 34 this year, that's not terrible. But free throw percentage is a concern from him. The shot blocking is not at a high enough rate. He's definitely not passing it ever. He just doesn't do enough to ever be considered a top 150 threat and not really even a top 200 threat. He is still decently young. He still has not turned 23. He's only 22.5. So he does have a bit of development left in him. But this is his fourth season in the NBA. He's going to be a restricted free agent. So what happens with him next year? He could very well not find himself with a job and maybe a non-guaranteed camp contract or something like that. I wouldn't be stunned if that's the way things go. I also wouldn't be stunned, given to the Bulls front office, that they offer him a 4-year, $32 million deal. Shout out to Chris Felizio. So I think that his future in the league is definitely up in the air. But if Markkanen sits some games down here, he can be a 14-team streamer. He can be a 18-team league option, but not a must-own guy, or not a guy that we're super excited about in any sort of stretch as we move forward. But someone requested him as the player spotlight, and I thought it'd be good to talk about him, giving us shit on him a lot during his rookie season, and he has shown some improvements, but not enough to really be an impact player. Let's talk some DFS now. The perfect DFS lineup for FanDuel today: Kemba Walker 56.6 and Rajon Rondo 47.4. Eric Gordon had 35.1 and the Don had 46. Dwayne Bacon had 32.1 in that abomination, while Jingling Joe had 38.2, Tone Davis 60.3, and Derek Favors 39.9, while Kosta Koufos rounded it out with 55.7 for a total of 411.3, and that cost $59,700. On DraftKings, Kemba went for 61.75, the Don had 44.25, Jingling Joe 42.5, Blakey Griffin 55.5, Kosta had 40.25, Rondo 48, Favors 39.25, and Frankie Mason III had 36. That was a total of 367.5, and it cost $49,800 dues. All right, we're talking Friday's action. Now, there are 10 games on, but as I said earlier in the show, this time of year, you need to be limiting your DFS output. Still download the show, still listen to the show, but when you're playing DFS, you can either stop it completely, which I know so many of you won't, but there is just way more variance in maybe go limited entries into GPPs, because even in cash games, it's hard to get a full handle on what's going on with bullshit like the Schroeder arrest coming out well after lock. The first game we look at here is the Clippers and the Pacers. The Pacers are favored by 2.5 points. Don't know why it said it that way. And the total is 218.5. DeMontis Sabonis is doubtful for the Pacers, meaning we get a little bit more Al Jefferson and some more solidity to Thad Young and Miles Turner's minutes. At point guard, Daz Collison's at 6,000. He's been playing solidly, but I don't like spending 6,000 on him as a low upside guy. While Austin Rivers at 6-1, I'd feel much better about spending on Austin Rivers, even though the matchup against the Pacers for Austin is far from favorable. Corey Joseph, Milos, Sindarius, Thornwell, I think there's very little to see with those guys. At shooting guard, Lou Williams is at 6,800, continues to price drop for Lou, and that's fine because he's still giving you 30-plus per night, and I think that he is a pretty good cash option, but an excellent tournament guy here. While Oladipo at 8,900, not really getting to that level too much at all at the moment. The matchup is super positive for him, though. So if you're going to use him, I would look to be tournaments, but I wouldn't be super invested. At small forward, Bojan Bogdanović, we know the uncertainty, and he has been a downright stinker over the last five, averaging just 12 points with a high score of 16. So that's a pretty strong fade, while Wes Johnson and Lance Stephenson aren't moving the needle for me. Thad Young is, though. He's at 5,700. I feel like that's pretty solid for cash with Sabonis out. He's averaging 32 over his last five. You can't ask for too much more than that. While Toby Harris is a full $1,900 more expensive than Thad. But again, I think it's not a bad spot to use him. Probably lean more tournaments, but he's good for 35 to 36 each night, which is not bad at that sort of a salary. The table, Montrezl Harrell's at 5,000. That takes away so much of his value, while I'm not interested in Trevor Booker. At center, Miles Turner up to 7,100. Playing well, but at that salary, I'll leave it alone. Now, it is a positive matchup. Centers have been doing pretty well against DeAndre Jordan in their overall statistical accumulation. But just looking at salary base there for Turner, his inconsistency from game to game, although it's been better recently, is not one I'm really ready to go with. Well, Jordan is now up to 8,300 after destroying the Bucks. Now, he's got every opportunity to grab every single available rebound in this game, and that gives him a boost. But I think he's more, at that salary, more of a tournament player. Of course, we're not really looking too much at Boban or Al Jefferson. Let's look at this one on DraftKings. I like Toby a lot at 7,400. Oladipo is more in play at 82, but still not super interested. While Lou Williams' price is nowhere near as sexy as FanDuel, 7,200. 6,000 for Rivers is not bad, while Miles Turner at 67, yeah, probably moves into the tournament sort of style play. Let's have a look at the next game. We've got the Denver Nuggets and the Washington Wizards. The Wizards are favored by 1.5. Mike Scott and Jody Meeks both missed last game with an illness, so they're questionable. If they are out, we're looking at boosts for Markieff Morris, Kelly Oubre, Thomas Satoransky, and some more minutes for Ramon Sessions in that case. For Denver, Gaz Harris is out.
Nice, Gary!
All right, for point guard, Satoransky's at 6,200. It is a really positive matchup for him, but the production just hasn't been at the level commensurate with that salary, so I don't really feel interested. 5,000? Sure. 5,400? Sure. 62? No. The Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, 7,500. Satoransky's had a pretty negative effect on a lot of point guards that he's matched up with. Murray's getting consistent minutes. In fact, he's averaging 35 minutes over his last five games and 36 points in that time. But that's sort of what you need him to get to. And in a marginally subpar matchup, I think there are better ways to go about it. Shooting guard Brad Beal's at 7,900. He's been nowhere really near that number on a consistent basis. He has had some big ones, but also some real stinkers. But I do like him as a tournament guy just because of the matchup strength here without Gaz Harris around. Farton Will Barton's at 7,100. We know about his inconsistency, but I do like him quite a bit as a tournament guy. For the small forwards, Otto Porter is at 7,900. That's too expensive for Otto. He has stepped his game up with John Wall out, but not to that level. That's a 40-point level, and Otto is not at that level. He's averaging 28 over his last five in 34 minutes per game. That's not cutting it. so I won't be cutting him into a lineup. Baby Neck Wilson Chandler's at 6,000, putting up decent numbers, but it's not translating to big DFS nights, and I just think that that sort of shooting percentage with a negative matchup is just not interesting. While Kelly Oubre is at 5,400, he had 43 last game. If Meeks and Scott are out, then yeah, I think Oubre is worth a look. Otherwise, he's just a real tournament flyer. At power forward, you've got Markieff at 4,900. Gets a boost if Scott is out. Otherwise, his production has been really poor lately. While Mason Plumlee at 37, probably not interested then. Paulie Millsap's the interesting one, though. He's at 7,000. Had a real monster in that last game that Denver won, the blowout victory. At $7,000, though, I don't know. He hasn't really been at that level consistently since returning from his wrist injury. I wouldn't feel like he is. He's definitely not one of the better players on the board. Nikola Jokic at 9,500. That's a $1,000 price drop, so I'm jumping on this. I think that this is a great spot for Jokic to get to 50. I think it's a cash and a tournament play. Well, Gortat is as much of a negative option as you can get, I believe. Not interested in Yanmihinmi either. On Draft Stars, I like Porter way more over here. 6,600 is a super sexy price, so I'm in on that. Markieff at 52 is also at a nice price. Well, the Blue Arrow at 6,900.
Giggity!
That is a tournament guy to look at, and a pretty strong one. Jokic at 9.3 is also pretty good, but there's a lot more value over on DraftKings where he doesn't stand out quite as much as what he does on FanDuel. Satoransky also more in play at 5,500. That's a more reasonable salary as opposed to the 62 that he's sitting on at FanDuel. The next game we look at, the Nets and the Raptors. Blowout potential here for sure. The Raptors are favored by 12.5 and the total's 221.5. CJ Miles missed last game with an illness. If he is out again, it boosts a little bit of value for Norm Powell, but DeLon Wright and Fred VanVleet get the bigger boost in that situation. But because this is a blowout risk, you've got a chance of VanVleet and Wright pushing 30 minutes anyway, Jakob Poeltl getting extra run, Pascal Siakam getting extra playing time if the Raptors can salt this one away early. So that's why I like VanVleet at 5,000. He's coming off a 34-point game in 29 minutes with the combination of potentially sitting Lowry early in this game with Miles maybe out. Then VanVleet's got that 30-40-point upside, which makes him a great tournament guy. Dinwiddie's at 5,800 for the Nets. His numbers have been precipitously falling, so he is a guy that I'm not too keen on. Well, DeLon Wright at 46. Again, the numbers are really strong, and there's a few things working in his favor. I'd take Freddie over him, but I think DeLon is still an option. For the shooting guards, DeRozan's at 8,000. The risk of the blowout would steer me away, while D'Angelo Russell at 6,800. He's been really putting up consistent numbers, and that's a shock for him, considering how inconsistent he was when he returned from the knee. He's averaging 35 over the last five, which at 6,800 is definite value. And I think that he is worth looking at. I'm still not 100% sold on the consistency, so he's more of a tournament guy than anything else. Well, LeVert is at 6,000. I think that's a little bit steep. At small forward, Miles is minimum. No way. Damari Carroll at 55, a real turd in the last game, but had been strong prior to that. It is his former team. He did struggle against them last time. Hashtag revenge game. At 5,500 for Damari, I think he's a tournament guy because he can go for 40. He probably won't. While the blue swimmer had 5,000. Very little interest there. Joe Harris, of course not. Power forward, Pascal Siakam, 46, in the Fred VanVleet, DeLon Wright mold. If you think it's going to be a blowout and Ibaka's going to continue to suck, then Siakam can come in here and have a 30-pointer. I just don't think his upside's all that high. Definitely not as high as, say, someone like Ibaka, who is only $500 more expensive. Now, I'm not really getting behind Ibaka here, but I think that if you're going to use one of those two guys in a tournament, it's probably going to be Serge. Hollis Jefferson's at 6,600. His lowest score in his last five has been 33, which is sensational floor value. I think you do have to look at him. It is a negative matchup. Ibaka, Siakam, pretty good defenders, although Ibaka's obviously dropped off quite a bit in that area. But it is worth looking at Hollis Jefferson here, given how big his minutes have been and his production's been really solid also. At center, Poeltl's at 43, a good tournament guy with eight. And again, centers against the Nets, we know that big numbers can come. We saw Dwight have a 30 and 30. At 4,300, he can very comfortably get to 35 points here, Jakob. So he is in play. While Valanciunas, again, at 7,400, that's a pretty big price, but he averages 37 against the Nets in only 25 minutes. So a strong tournament play with such a positive matchup. Jarrett Allen at 48, I don't really think so. I didn't talk about Kyle Lowry before either. He's at 8,300, and those fears that I have, point guards against the Nets are great, but could he be that good that he plays only 26, 27 minutes? I think that's a possibility, so really hard to rely upon Kyle Lowry. On DraftKings, D'Angelo's at 64, like that quite a bit, while for tournaments, Spencer Dinwiddie down at 5,000 is worth a flyer in a multi-tournament lineup situation. Van Vliet and Siakam are also some tournament guys where, again, I'm fading DeRozan and Lowry. You can throw Valanciunas, you can throw Poeltl in there because it is a superb matchup. One of the best matchups in the entire NBA is a center going up against the Nets, as we have highlighted many, many times on this podcast. The Suns and the Cavs. Cleveland has a lot of situations that we don't know about. Tristan Thompson is questionable. Larry Nance Jr. is questionable. Rocket Rodney Hood is questionable. And I am at this point ruling Kyle Korver out. His brother's funeral is not taking place until Monday. They are having a family memorial situation before the funeral and viewing on Sunday. So you'd have to imagine he is remaining with his family across the weekend and will be back at the start of next week. Now, that could change. But the expectation from my part is that Korver will not play in this game. The Suns also have an injury concern, and that, of course, is Devin Booker, who's missed the last couple with a hand injury. If he is out, Troy Daniels and Josh Jackson get a boost. We've also got TJ Warren, who's listed as questionable in this game. So, yeah, some significant injury situations to pay attention to in this one. At point guard, Lord Alfred Payton's at 5,200. He has been close to abominable recently. Great positive matchup. We've seen him do well against the Cavs. That salary is really nice. You cannot trust him at all in cash. You would think the absence of Booker and Warren would really help him, but it just hasn't been the case. I still think that I can't go past the record of point guards with the Cavs, the record of him against the Cavs, and the opportunity that's potentially opening up for him to be a tournament guy. But realistically, it's a long shot flyer, but it could be a real money winner in a GPP. Georgie Hill's at 47, big game last one with Rocket out. I think he gets more value if Hood remains sidelined, and it is a super positive matchup. While Jose Calderon is at 3,800, and he's been getting some decent minutes starting with Korver out. I don't really like it, though. Shooting guards. Jordy Clarkson's at 45, tournaments only. He's inconsistent. He's not very good, but he can have the occasional big one. While Devin Booker at 7,300. If Booker plays, I actually like this one for him. I think he's got real 40-point upside if he happens to play, but we don't know that yet. Rocket is at 47. The Plumbers at 36. Yeah, J.R. Smith is always an interesting tournament guy, especially if Hood is out. While Troy Daniels at 39. We would be all over that if Booker is sidelined. Small four, TJ Warren, 6,500, no thanks. Joshie Jackson at 7,100, that's pushing a little bit too high for my liking. I would throw it into a tournament, but I would not want any part of it in cash. Whereas on the other side, LeBron James, 13,100.
LeBron James.
I think it's too high. We know that LeBron's been excellent. He's averaging 71 over his last three. Shit, he's averaging 71 over his last five games, and his lowest score is 68, precipitating that sort of a price rise. But How comfortably can the Cavs win this one? They could be 40 up and LeBron could play 31 minutes. That is a significant risk. If you're going to use LeBron, it has to be in a tournament. I don't think that you can rely upon him, A, at this price tag, B, against this opponent in a cash lineup. Could be wrong, but that's the way that I see it. At power forward, Kevin Love's at 7,500. Obviously been killing it since returning from his hand injury. A super positive matchup for him, but do they need 29 out of Kevin Love? Probably not. And that's a risk in itself, but he can easily give you 35 in 25 minutes. So he's a tournament guy. And in fact, I'd probably lean a little bit more towards him than LeBron, especially considering you're saving almost $6,000 there. Marquise Chris, no. Larry Nance at 65, not with Love back. And Jeff Green at 45.
My name is Jeff.
I think Jeff Green at 4,500, if we see Nance and Hood ruled out, you could put him into a tournament, especially given how positive the matchup is. At center, no Tyson Chandler, so Alex Len at 4,400. He had a monster last game, 43 points. Big source Alan Williams is still not back, so Len is an interesting tournament-looking guy here. Well, Tristan Thompson could be back, but I don't think that anybody should care from a DFS point of view. On DraftKings, Love at 7,700 does have some value, even though there is some risk there, while LeBron is a much more reasonable 12-1. All the same caveats apply, but you can feel a little bit more confident using him than you would, say, on FanDuel, given how high that price is. But the negativity about the opponent still stands true. Let's go on to the next game. We've got the Minnesota Timberwolves and the New York Knicks. The Wolves are favored by 6.5, and the total is 222.
Two for two, two, two.
And a half. I just wanted to play that. Injury-wise, we don't know Actually, I think Lance Thomas is ruled out already. Yep, Lance Thomas is already ruled out, so that's some more minutes there for Mick Beasley. Or Derek Rose is questionable. That's not impacting anyone's DFS lineup. Let's look point guards. Manny Moutier at 4,700. Yeah, no way in cash. You can't, no way. He's terrible. He will continue to start over Trey Burke, though, who's at 4,500, who I believe has limited upside and a shaky floor, which are the two things that you don't want in concert. Well, Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
He has a really, really good matchup. He is playing very, very well with Jimmy Butler out. That should continue. 7,400. I actually like it. I think it's a good spot for Teague here. And one thing we know, even if the game's a blowout, he's not sitting down and resting. No chance in hell. Frankie Ntilikina is at minimum salary because Jeff Hornacek is a bad coach. And Tyus Jones also minimum because Tom Thibodeau's not a great one himself. At shooting guard, Jamal Crawford's at 4,000. Real opportunity for Jamal. Super easy matchup. He's got minutes over Nemanja Bjelica and Tyus Jones last game. And that gives him 30-point upside, which you should be looking at as a tournament type of a guy. Not super intently, though. Timmy Hardaway is at 59. The numbers have dipped a little bit recently. The minutes have been relatively consistent, so I think he is a strong tournament play as well. Well, Wigo at 7,000. You got to love the matchup for Wiggins. You don't like the player, but his production's jumped. He's at 35 over the last three, which is sort of where it needs to be. And I don't think it's a total stay away, despite some of his failings in the past. Bjelica's at 5,800. Not many people will be on him for a good reason because he's averaging under 19 in the last three games. But I think he's worthy of a bounce back GPP guy, especially given the ease of the matchup and again, the fact that I think we see him slightly more minutes than we saw in the last couple. While Beasley is at 5,900. Really good recently. Mick, I don't trust Hornacek to give consistent minutes, and I don't trust Beasley to shoot consistently well. At power forward, we're looking at Taj at 54. The numbers have really been on the decline for Gibson, so that's not interesting to me. At center, we're looking at Enes Kanter at 64. No. Kylo Quinn at 5,000. Also a no. While Karl Anthony Towns is at 10.6. It's a big strong yes for me. Really like it here. He dominates the Knicks in general. He's playing big minutes stupidly, but he's doing it. He's getting 50 a lot of the time. I really like this one for Townsie in a super strong matchup. On DraftKings, Townsie again at 9.8. We really, really like that one there. Not much else that stands out as being excellent. 6,700 for Wigo is interesting, especially given the quality of the opposition. While Bjelica at 62 doesn't have quite the same appeal as he does over on FanDuel. Jamal Crawford also at 4,000, the same as his FanDuel price. The Milwaukee Bucks and the Chicago Bulls. The Bucks are favored by 5. The total is 216.5. Chris Dunn is out. Zach LaVine is out. Lauri Markkanen is questionable, and he thinks he will be ready to go. On the Bucks side of things, I don't know if Jason Terry will start again, but it's a possibility. Paul Zipser is out for the Bulls as well. And Antonio Blakeney is done for the season with his wrist issues. So, at point guard, Jaren Grant's at 4,700. I don't think you should really get excited there, but I like Campaign again at 5,600. Even if he has the bad shooting nights, he's getting assists, he's rebounding, he's getting steals, and he's producing value there. So I think he's a good cash play with tournament upside. Whereas Eric Bledsoe at 7,800, it's a super positive matchup for him. The Bucks aren't necessarily cruising, so it's not like it's necessarily going to be a huge blowout. So he's in line for close to a 40-pointer. So I do like Bledsoe here as well. Brandon Jennings. Yeah, nah. At shooting guard, Justin Holiday's at minimum salary. No Blakeney, no LaVine, no Dunn. Do they have to play him minutes? Probably. So I think that he is worth it, especially at minimum salary. Now, he's not very good. The Bulls have been intentionally sitting him out, but they just don't have any options unless Ryan Archer Jackano comes back in and plays, which is a possibility. But I think that Holiday is worth a look here. Just monitor the news during the day. Chrissy Middleton's at 8,100, really putting up the big numbers. And with the, I didn't even mention that Giannis Antetokounmpo is out of this game, or he's doubtful. So we're unlikely to see Yanni. So Middleton at 81, he's already averaging 40 over the last five anyway. This should be another 40 for him in a great, great matchup. So I'm all about Chrissy Middleton here. Jace Terry's at minimum salary. Maybe some extra shots with Yanni out. It's a possibility, but I think he'd be pretty desperate. At small forward, David Nwaba's at 44. Some extra bump for him, perhaps, with LaVine, Dunn, and Blakeney out, but only really as a tournament guy. Well, Denzel the Hammer Valentine at 6,000. That's not an appealing price. Yes, he is averaging 28.5 over the last five, but that's fueled in large part due to a 54-point game he had in there. He also had a 13-point game in that five-game streak. So really up and down, and you're only looking at tournaments, I believe. For power forward, no Giannis should mean a big game from Jabari Parker. He had 38 last game, only replacing Yanni for the second half. So I think he's, you know, really easily got 30-point floor here and should be able to push even further. So I like him pretty strongly as a cash guy. While the Muppet John Henson's at 51, perhaps he gets a little bit of extra run with Yanni not there to take some of those center minutes. I think he should be able to exceed 26 points, making him a strong option with good tournament upside. Punchbob Shiploke is at 6,900. That's Bobby Portis for you new listeners. Yeah, not sure about Bob here. The minutes have been down. He can always blow up, but that would make him a tournament guy. While Markkanen at 6,000, I just don't think they'd really extend his minutes too much. And if he plays, Noah Vonleh's value goes in the tank. At center, Chris Felizio. Strong performances, 25 average over the last three, 4,200, with Holiday likely to play, Lopez probably won't, so Felizio should be able to get mid to high 20s in minutes, and that should enable him to be a cash center option if you're looking to save money at that position. I don't think Tyler Zeller or Thon McCur are really DFS options here. On DraftKings, Jabari and Bledsoe are both cash guys. Middleton, I think you can also have in that discussion, but at 8,300, his price is way less appealing than FanDuel. And for tournaments, you've got the Hammer, Denzel Valentine, David Nwaba, and Justin Holiday at 34. But really, you're hard to lock in any of those guys for cash. Campaign at 54 is also worth a look, but there are many more other options on DraftKings as opposed to FanDuel. Let's go to the next game now. We've got the Miami Heat. We've got the Oklahoma City Thunder. No Dwayne Wade and no Hassan Whiteside, most likely. They're both listed as doubtful. Tyler Johnson had a big game last time, but it still only resulted in 24 points. He's at 4,700, which is fine, yeah, for that price, but I think he's still more of a tournament guy. While the iron shoulder Goran Dragic is at 6,500, tends to play better without Dwayne Wade around. I think you can use him as a cash guy here in what should be a tightly fought matchup. While Russ Westbrook's at 11-4, I like Russ here. I like him better than LeBron. I feel like his ability to get to that level is higher than what LeBron's is at a, you know, $2,000 more salary. For the shooting guards, very little here. The Duke is a tournament guy. Wayne Ellington at 45, but I don't think he's a good one. At small forward, we're looking at Paulie George at 8,100. Has struggled in the past with Joshie Richardson. Yeah, not really super interested in Paul George here. Maybe he's a tournament guy. Well, Corey Brewer's price is now up to 5,000. With good reason. He's averaging 33 over his last five. I think you can consider that an option if you've got some other high-priced guys around. Yeah, he's getting the consistent minutes, and we're seeing him consistently produce in different areas, which is great news as well. Yeah, diversifying your production is a good way to enable consistency. Joshie Richardson's at 62. He's also been playing fairly well with a 36 average over his last three. The Paul George defense might be a problem, but we know that Richardson's value doesn't come from offense. It comes from defensive stuff. It comes from other things. So I think that he's worth, yeah, maybe that's a little bit high for cash, but he's worth a tournament look. Probably not the strongest one out there. At power forward, Melo's at 53. Love the ability for Melo to be a tournament guy here. He can get you 35. He can also get you 20, which would steer me away from cash. Olynyk's at 6,700. Crushing it, clearly. That price is getting a little bit steep, though. Now, his last performance is he's averaging 48 over his last three. Yeah, killing it. But I'm not sure how confident I am in Kelly Olynyk getting me 33. I feel decently confident, but I think I'd be leaning more towards tournaments here. Jim Johnson at 6,000 again. Yeah, price is probably a little bit too high up, meaning he's more of a tournament guy. And I think the ownership on those guys will also be pretty high for tournaments too. So that's something to pay attention to. At center, Steve-O Adams is at $7,000. No one's there to really restrict him too much on the boards and on the offensive glass. $7,000 is a pretty high price though. And I think that you can do better by spending $7,000 in another area. On DraftKings, I like Westbrook, I like George, I like Dragic quite a bit, cash and tournaments. Tyler Johnson at 47, that GPP guy, while the Linux price is up. Mallow at 55 is not as appealing. Joshie Richardson at 57 is, I really like that for cash. And Steven Adams at 6'5 is also a strong DraftKings guy. Let's go on to the next game now. We've got the Utah Jazz on a back-to-back taking on the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs are favored by 3.5, and the total is a puny 194 points. Kawhi Leonard is out of this one. There is very little I like from this game from a DFS point of view. You got such a low total. This is the game I think that you should be avoiding in a lot of cases. Good individual, great individual defenders on both teams, good defensive schemes, offensively challenged players at times. Very little that I like here. Mills and Rubio, your point guards. Rubio at 7,300. crushing that almost every game. I think that he'd be a guy that I would look to out of everyone here. He's probably the guy that I feel a bit more most comfortable with, given the pricing structure on FanDuel. Tone Parker, DeJounte Murray, very little interest in those players. At shooting guard, Dan Green, no. Don, 7,500 for the Don. Now, he was a monster here. He played very well last time against San Antonio. I think you look at him as a tournament guy, especially given how low that price has dipped now from the 8,100 it was today. I think that that is worth a look just for that alone, but probably more for tournaments. Manu, no interest. At small forward, Kyle Anderson's at 5,100. It's a bad matchup for Anderson. He's inconsistent with low ceiling. That's not a player that I want to use in DFS. Jingle and Joe's crushing it lately at 6,400, but the Dan Green, Kyle Anderson defensive combo is no joke. Ingles has been super consistent. His lowest score is 29 over his last five, but again, I think with 10 games on, you can do better than him. At power forward, Derek Favors at 5,300. If he plays like he did today, it's a massive bargain. My confidence in him doing that's relatively low, but I don't hate using Favors here, especially in a tournament. Jay Crowder's probably fade-worthy. At center, Gobert is at 8,800. Centers have struggled against the Spurs for whatever reason this year. Gobert, I guess you could call him a marginal anomaly, but his last three against San Antonio, he averages 33. It's not like he's been killing it there in 31 minutes. I think he's more of a tournament guy just because that price is too high to consider. LaMarcus Aldridge at 47, I'm sorry, Pau Gasol at 47, nothing to do with. Well, LaMarcus at 9,300. He has been putting up consistently big numbers. The matchup here and the pace of this game is a level of concern for Aldridge, but I don't think that you should be 100% shying away from him. On DraftKings, Gobert at 78. Now that's way better and I'm all about that. Cash and tournaments. Aldridge at 86 also has a fair degree of value, and I love the Don at 7,000 and Rubio at 67. There's value in all those guys. It's a completely different story to how it looks on FanDuel. The Celtics and the Blazers. Injury status, Yusuf Nurkic is questionable with lower back soreness, while Evan Turner also has lower back soreness, but he is probable. If Nurkic is out, then we're looking at Zach Collins and Ed Davis as pretty strong tournament guys. In fact, I think Davis at his salary would become a pretty good cash guy at 4,200. For the point guards, Lillard is at 9,300. We still have no Jaylen Brown for Boston, of course, no Kyrie Irving and no Marcus Smart. They're not playing. Lillard's at 9,300. He's been putting up some pretty good numbers. It's dipped a little bit, to be fair, averaging just 42 over his last five, but I'd still be pretty happy rolling him out. Shani Larkin's a tournament guy, just a tick over minimum. Shabazz Napier, probably not. While Terry Rozier, Tito36, he is at $7,000, and he's been giving you about 32 a night. That's not enough at that price, and we know all season point guards have struggled against Portland, so I'm going to leave Rozier and his $7,000 alone. CJ McCollum is at $7,000 also, has done well against Boston, struggled in his last couple of games here, only a 28 average over the last three, but he is worth a look. Probably lean marginally more towards tournaments, but I do think he's a cash guy also. For the small forwards, Mo Harkless just shooting the lights out, and it's resulting in an average of 27 points. And that's just not good enough when you're shooting 70% from the field, so I'm not interested in Harkless here. Being able to continue that is pretty unlikely. With all these injuries, Jason Tatum is getting more usage and more production. He's at 6,600. I feel like that salary's pushed him out of the value zone, so I'm not really interested there. Evan Turner, no way. At power forward, Marcus Morris at 57. The salary has dipped, so I'm all about it here. He's going to get minutes. He just jacks his way into big counting stats through accumulation, and with everyone injured, he's still going to do that. Eddie Davis, I talked about already, at 4,200, you want nothing to do with it. Unless Nurkic is out, then you want everything to do with it. While the Chief...
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He's at 6,500. He is averaging a mind-blowing 40 points over the last three games. Given his history, given the matchup, everything would tell me to steer clear of this, and that's what I will be saying. At center, Al Horford, 6,800. If Nurkic is out, I'm a little bit more interested in Horford. I think he's an interesting tournament guy that everyone will be steering clear of, meaning you can get some differentiation in GPPs, but I wouldn't go there for cash. Well, Nurkic is at 6,800 as well, and his form has really risen over the last couple, but Al Horford's a significant deterrent defensively and has, all season, along with Aaron Baines, really limited opposition center, so that would leave Nurkic to be a fade, given his inconsistency issues. on DraftKings. Lillard, Horford, and Marcus Morris are all cash and tournament plays. I think McCollum at 65 is interesting with some tournament value. Rozier is even more of a fade at 7,100. That's just too high. While Aminu, I could see plugging him into a tournament at 5,600. That price is just low enough where there is a chance that he can still get value even if he's not as sensational as what he was. Greggy Munro also playing quite well. Don't hate using him here. Even on FanDuel, he's got a little bit of value. Let's go on to the last game of the night. We're talking Hawks, we're talking Warriors. Dennis Schroeder is going to be all rested up to take on Steph Curry, and I think he plays pretty big minutes. It's not like they're going to be challenging the Warriors. Steph will be back. Draymond, KD are out. Klay is out, and Omri Caspi is listed as questionable. At point guard, Schroeder is at 7,300. I think that people will be scared of rests, they'll be scared of limited minutes, but the Hawks' MO, majority of the time, against a good team, these players play big minutes, and Schroeder could be getting 33 or 34 and giving you 40 points. So I think that at 7,300, he is a tournament guy despite the dickery of today. Of course, if he is out again and I'm made to look stupid, then Isaiah Taylor at 3,600 is an excellent, excellent option. Tyler Dorsey is not excellent under any circumstance. Well, Steph at 10,000, blowout potential, easing back from the ankle injury. I don't want to spend 10,000. Even though he's going to get so much usage in this game and he could really smash that, I would only want to do it in tournaments. I just don't have the certainty in cash. For shooting guards, Uncle P is at $5,000. Struggled a little bit the last couple. Steph coming back maybe hurts a little bit, but I still think he's a worthy GPP guy. If Steph's drawing so much attention it leaves him open, we know he can knock down the shots and he could easily get you 27 or 28 here. Nick Young, while Pat McCaw at minimum salary, played a lot of minutes last game, but I don't really think we need to get too interested there. Damo Lee at 37, strong performance from Lee again, should get another start. Tournament, why not? Who bloody knows what this team's going to do? At small forward, Iggy, Caspi, no, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, shit the bed today. Really low minutes because tank game. Not a tank game coming up here. 7,500. It's expensive for cash. I think it's too expensive, but I do think that Prince is a GPP guy. Power forward, do they start Jordan Bell at power forward? Do they start Kevon Looney? Bell's at 4,100. I am all in on him here. Even if he only gets 24 minutes, I think he can beat the 20-point mark. So I'm in on Jordan Bell. Dave West at 4,000. Maybe a little bit high. At 3,700, I'd say he'd be a great cash play. And I think you also have to consider Looney at 4,800, who's been playing exceptionally well. I would be more interested in him as a tournament guy, but both he and Bell are in really good spots here. For the Hawks, we don't know the status of the Baptist John Collins. It looks like he's leaning to be out, but if he played, I think he would be an interesting tournament guy, but not a cash player. At center, Zaza's at 3,600. Could be an option for Pajuli with everyone else out. He's had a couple of big games, but nothing you want to do outside of tournament. But centers against the against the Hawks, we saw Costa Kufos do it today. So big, goofy, white European centers. Maybe there's something in it. Tournament for Zaza, maybe. Well, The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman at 5,600. Centers against the Warriors struggle. I think he's tournament, but even then, not feeling super strong about it. If the Baptist is out, John Collins, you look at Mike Muscala as an option at 4,400. Over on DraftKings, I like Nick Young at 46. I like Jordan Bell at 44. Looney at 41. There's value there. Plus, as I said, with Schroeder and Prince, well, Steph at 10,600. That's even more unappealing to me, given the extra $600 tacked on with him over on DraftKings. All right, let's look at the other sites now before we wrap this up. On Yahoo for tournaments, we're looking at Jamal the Blue Arrow Murray, Denzel the Hammer Valentine, David Nwaba, Siakam, Iguodala, Georgie Hill, Manny Moutier, Justin Holiday, Kelly Oubre, Alex Len, and the Duke, Wayne Ellington. And for cash, it's Felizio, it's Poeltl, it's Greggy Munro.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Campaign, Fred VanVleet, The Muppet, John Henson, Uncle P, Kelly Olynyk, Jordan Bell, Jabari, Parker, Bledsoe, Oladipo, Aldridge, Lillard, and Towns. For Moneyball, for tournaments, we're looking at Nick Jokic, Miles Turner, The Hammer, Denzel Valentine, Uncle P, The Muppet, Van Vliet, Nwaba, Georgie Hill, Tyler Johnson, Justin Holiday, Jordy Clarkson, Kevon Looney, Pachulia, Harkless, Poeltl. And then we go to cash and tournaments, and we go Jamal Crawford, Felizio, Alex Len, Austin Rivers, Thad Young, Markieff Morris, Kelly Olynyk, Bell, Jordan Bell, Jabari Parker, Toby Harris, Otto Porter, Love, Beal, Bledsoe, Lillard, Towns, and Westbrook. And finally, on draft stars, tournaments, we've got Kevin Love, Jonas Valanciunas, Markieff Morris, Jordy Bell, Georgie Hill, David Nwaba, Kyle O'Quinn, Zaza, Looney, Felizio, Shane Larkin, Jose Calderon, and for cash in tournaments, it's Harkless, Dave West, Corey Brewer, Marcus Morris, Satoransky, Nick Young, Jabari Parker, Toby Harris, Eric Bledsoe, Damian Lillard, Karl Anthony Towns, and Russell Westbrook. Guys, if you're listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating, leave a review, and you can also find us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, lockedonsports.com, or on Twitter at LockedOnNBAnet. Same on Facebook. Follow me, Josh Lloyd, on Twitter at RedRock_Bball. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Brandon Paul.